This podcast is sponsored by Marching Show Concepts and Center X Productions, found at msconcepts.com. We ask drill writers to share their advice for band directors and their staff members to help them do a better job, write a better drill, and create a better working relationship. The response was so great that this is the first of 3 podcasts on this topic, and these drill writers share very helpful advice that anyone can use to be more successful.
I think a huge thing, across the process is making sure that the music arrangements are of high quality, that they're creative, that there's a variety of instrumentations, a variety of slow and fast and high and low.
Be open, be honest, set up a professional climate, and don't be fearful of criticism because we all want what's best for the kids.
Valuable advice from drill writers on the Marching Roundtable. This podcast is sponsored by Marching Show Concepts and Center X Productions, found at msconcepts.com. With over 30 years in the business, MSC and Center X have become a leader in the industry, with over 650 original and arranged shows, including all grade levels and budgets in mind. Marching Show Concepts and Center X's creative team have hundreds of years of collective experience and are there to help you succeed. Give them a call today at 800-356-4381 or visit them at www.msconcepts.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Marching Roundtable Podcast. This is Tim Hinton. Thank you so much for listening. Really excited to be talking to these three gentlemen, drill writers extraordinaire. On the line, Evan Hines. Evan, how are you?
Great, Tim.
Yeah, thank you for being here again. You've been on some podcasts before. I really appreciate you coming back. So thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
Also on the line, Doug Goodwin. Doug, how are you?
Doing fantastic. Yeah. Excited to be here talking with these gentlemen today.
Yeah, absolutely. Doug, you've been on a podcast too before, so thanks for coming back.
Absolutely. Thanks for asking.
Of course. And Stephen Aaliyah. Stephen, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Cool. So, Stephen, we'll start with you since you're new to the podcast. Thanks for being here. Tell us sort of where you are in the world and what you do as far as the world of drill writing.
Well, I was a high school, middle school band director for 17 years and ended up to the point where I decided to write drill as a full-time career. So I have my own LLC. I write for a little more than 20 high school bands every year, 4 college bands, plus a group from Colombia, the Medellin Gran Banda, as well as a few winter guard shows, a few indoor percussion shows, some winds groups in the winter time. So I've been able to make it a full-time career for myself, which I obviously is wonderful, being able to be a stay-at-home dad and raise my 2-year-old daughter.
Yeah, congratulations. That's awesome. Didn't you say a minute ago that you were about to head down to Colombia to rehearse with a group?
I am. I leave on Friday, and I come back on Monday. The Medellin Gran Banda will be coming to the United States in August to participate in Sound Sport. And they were here in 2014 as well, and they were actually the best in show champions of both the Atlanta and Indianapolis SoundSport regionals, and so we're really excited for them to return.
Wow, very cool. Well, have fun on your travels, and thanks for being here today. Very cool. So, Evan, tell everybody sort of where you are in the world and what your connection is to the world of drill.
Yeah, sure. This is going to be my 7th year of kind of doing what I'm doing. I'm the percussion director at O'Fallon Township High School in Southern Illinois, about 20 minutes east of St. Louis. And so besides doing that, I write drill and percussion arrangements. I've even started this year doing some wind arrangements also. But typically I'm doing 10 to 15 percussion arrangements, 10 to 15 drills every year. And I've just really been glad I've been able to make the change. I was a band director for 9 years. But this has made it where I can kind of create my own schedule, choose what I do or what I don't do. And it's just, I'm really appreciative that I get to do this for a living.
Very cool. So how many of those percussion arrangements are also the same bands that you're doing the drill for?
Most of them are one and the same. There's a couple outliers that are drilling, a couple that are percussion only, but there's usually a solid like 8 to 10 that are like both parts. So I'm kind of seeing them from the wind arrangement side and then getting the percussion figured out and then turning to put on a different hat and doing the drill side of it. you know, and then getting frustrated at the drill rider because there wasn't a long enough transition or, you know, something like that. But then since I'm kind of within the whole process, it's easy to make those adjustments and changes and the communication along the way. So there's definitely pros to being kind of the middle part of the process, you know, a couple parts of it.
Absolutely. Having that bigger role can really be helpful. Very cool. Okay. And Doug Goodwin, tell us sort of where you are in the world and your drill riding world.
Yeah, I live in Evansville, Indiana. I am currently still serving as a band director in the Evansville Vandenberg School Corporation. I've been drill designing for, gosh, probably close to 16 years now. Specialize in small bands, small schools, write for programs in Indiana and California, Colorado, a few states. You know, just really excited about the growth of Goodwin Designs. I'm the owner and chief designer for that LLC, you know, and just have seen a lot of growth over the last few years. And I think, you know, most of us have a unique viewpoint of being a band director, that has allowed us to communicate a little bit more effectively with our clients. And I think that's what gives us a great launch pad for this discussion today.
Yeah, absolutely. And in case anybody doesn't know, I've been riding drills since 1978. Okay, I said it. So I'm old and I've been doing it a long time. And so we all have a lot to share. So I asked everybody to come with their best couple of tips. There's nothing more frustrating for a drill rider than for band directors to not make our lives easy. And I always feel like, oh, if this band director just knew a couple things or would cooperate in just this way, I would be able to give that person such a better drill and have such a better experience. So Evan, I'll go to you first, just arbitrarily. What's one of the tips you came to the table with today that you wish, you know, you want to tell band directors out there who are listening?
I think a huge thing, you know, across the process is making sure that the music arrangements are of high quality, that they're creative, that there's a variety of instrumentations, you know, a variety of slow and fast and high and low. Because the expectation as a drill rider is they want to see, you know, not the whole drill look the same the whole way through, that there is different densities and different, you know, things. And but if you're looking at a pep band chart where the whole thing's 120 and fortissimo full ensemble for 2.5 minutes, it's really hard to be creative with the drill, because I mean, we're trying to represent what you hear, and if what you hear is verse chorus, and it's forte the whole time, then the drill is going to be just a big thing moving the whole time. It doesn't make sense to break into segments or do sequences or anything like that. So I mean, it has to come, the music has to come first. I know there was some years where, you know, Cavaliers did the process backwards. They were thinking more visual first than figuring out the music to do the visual. But for most of us, and anything I've ever done, it's always been the music has to come first. And the higher quality of that music is, the easier it is to write the drill in a creative way.
Wow. Amen.
You know, I think yeah, I think one of the best parts about many of my clients is that they're a little bit more flexible once it gets in my hands in terms of adjusting the length of a transition, or even maybe taking advice in terms of voicings or voicing changes. So, you know, fortunately, I think one of the important things is just like trusting your drill writer as well, especially if you have a background like one of the three of us does, where we're a band director and we're a musician. And we are already thinking about what's in the best interest of the musicians as we write. So, sometimes the band director can help us by allowing also us to have that flexibility when it gets to our part of the process.
Wow, that's interesting. What do? You go back and ask them to change an arrangement and then they rewrite it, or like how does that work for you, Stephen? Cause I think it makes perfect sense, but that's an unusual request in my world.
Well, I think now, in the modern, marching arts world, there's a much greater synergy of the music and visual sides. And so if all we're doing as drill writers is reacting to a completed arrangement that is in, you know, that somebody's put in with a tablet and, you know, a chisel, right? And it's not movable at all. Then that greatly limits the quality of what we can do, in the same way that Evan said, like if we do get that pep band chart, maybe we have the opportunity to say to the band director, well, what if you cut the brass for these 8 bars and make that a woodwind feature? And then what if you, the next 8 bars, you find a way to make that more brass centered instead of it all being 2D for 16 bars? And I think, you know, that if the band, maybe, you know, one of my tips is that they should trust us to a degree, especially if we're, you know, like the three of us are reasonably accomplished writers. The four of us actually are reasonably accomplished writers. And so we all like have the opportunity to think bigger picture than just the dots on the page. And we can help them with that, with those bigger picture pacing concerns as it relates to the coordination between the music and visual side.
Yeah, I agree completely. You know, I think our current era of design, I kind of relate it to this being the Google Docs era, where everything is like a living and breathing document. That's including the drill, that's including the percussion score, the wind score, any choreography. Is that if you have a good team assembled and you're working together on that total product, that, you know, does need to be that communication and that flexibility within the designers to make changes or edits that help make the job easier of the other moving parts within the design.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So it's a matter of the team and the synergy of the team and the flexibility of the team to work as a team. It's sort of what you guys are describing, right?
Yes.
Yep.
I've definitely had times where, you know, the show gets to me and it's great music by itself. And then it's like 8.5 minutes long, you know, and I think for most bands trying to be efficient, you know, trying to be more in the seven somewhere. I mean, we personally like to be between 7, 7.5, you know, cause as you add 30 more seconds, then you're adding exponentially more guard work, more drill, more things like that, but kind of looking for points to cut. And sometimes I think it has a lot to do with just getting to the point, you know, that as music, in this area, that we're not listening to a 40-50 minute symphony. We're listening to a 7 minute thing that contains usually at least three kind of major themes, and it's having to get to the point quicker sometimes. And if the music wanders around too long in one area, then same thing with the drill, kind of ends up, you know, wandering a little bit lost for a while trying to get to that impact. So there's, like Steven said, it's definitely awesome when you can kind of go back from the other side. And he said, but for me, like being on the music side and looking as more of a music person, but then I get to the visual side, there's things that I realize, well, we transition 8 counts is never going to work here. You know, it has to be 16 or it has to be something else. So it definitely helps to be able to be flexible on both sides of that.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. I was going to speak to something you said earlier, Evan, too. If you ask Michael Gaines, he will tell you that that's an urban myth, that he actually, like the myth is that he wrote the drill first. In some of those Cavi shows, he will actually tell you that that's not true, which of course is an incredible compliment to Michael,
yeah,
that everybody thought it was so perfectly seamless. But having said that, there are definitely things in those Cavalier shows, because he'll say that, but I have to tell you, there are things in those shows where clearly he had a visual idea that they worked from, or there was a moment where they, you know, they made sure that was in there. So I think that there's a little bit of flexibility in even that urban myth, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that shows not only the excellence of that drill writer, but also shows excellence in the coordination with that musical team. I mean, that,
absolutely.
You know, that also says that, you know, Richard Cicedo, who was writing those wind arrangements, had the visual in mind. He was looking whole picture as he was writing as well, which is, you know, which is a sign of that great teamwork as well that we were speaking of a few moments ago.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's great. It's like one of the most perfect examples of that seamless teamwork. So your point exactly, Stephen. Okay, so Doug, what was one of the things you came with advice today?
Well, what I wanted to speak about today is just making sure that you understand the strengths and weaknesses of your design team. And really this leads towards the role of who the coordinator is in making sure that all of the moving parts have a synergy together and that they're working and flowing together. Some band directors do not feel comfortable in that role. You know, they see themselves as the voice of their students and the talent that in their organization. But the reason why some directors hire out the work is that they don't feel comfortable maybe either in a brainstorming role, or they don't have an extremely strong viewpoint as to how the drill works or how the music works. So, you know, understanding if if your drill designer's strength leads more towards making others' other ideas work from a coordinator, or if that drill designer likes to embody or to take on that role of the visual coordinator, and to sync all those ideas together in that visual product. Because I think we've all seen our fair share of marching designs that just aren't well coordinated, or haven't been, the dots haven't been connected between the music and the drill or the color guard choreography. And sometimes that responsibility was never delegated by the band director, or that responsibility was never assumed by the director. So I think that's a conversation that has to happen very early on in the process, is that who is taking on that role of, the central hub of communication between the different elements. I know there are some drill designers that just quite frankly don't have the time, be that person or that part of the working machine. I just really think that's a key, especially in today's competitive arena, to make sure the coordination is of the highest level.
Yeah, I would say that the main tip from that is having a program coordinator. And that's sort of a new concept. I've actually worked with some new directors who they had no idea what about that. So Stephen and Evan, how many of the shows you're working on have someone named as the coordinator for the whole program?
I think for me, there's probably, about 3/4 of what I end up doing, especially since I'm on the music and the visual side of it. I kind of unofficially become the program coordinator of it,
So people assume you're taking that role.
Right. It's just kind of part of just what it does. And especially if they're bringing me in to do two parts of the process, it's something I'm fine with being part of the package. There is some directors who like to do it themselves and be the program coordinator. I think the biggest thing with it is just defining who that person is, and then that person making decisions in like a reasonable amount of time. Mm-hmm. If you get to a point where it's like, okay, I need to cut 16 counts here, and then you wait, you can't wait. You need to be able to move forward with it. And that's what definitely helps when I'm on both sides. I'm program coordinating. I kind of make those choices. I generally am sending the information to the band director as I'm doing it, like, hey, we need to do this or that. And they're generally pretty flexible about it. It's a little bit of an education, I guess. Doug talked about earlier that, for band directors, like realizing that like once the music's done, it doesn't have to be set in stone. There's nothing that says you can't take and cut 4 measures out of it or add some measures or things like that. That like, it's not, the music is a stationary thing that can't be changed.
And from my standpoint, I think it just depends on the goals of the program. A bunch of the programs that I write for are either just mildly competitive or not competitive at all. Mm-hmm. And in those situations, often, they're expecting me to do the program coordination, but it's not necessarily in that full on, like, double check everything the guard mm-hmm. person writes, make sure it's musical and, have a say in the arrangements from the beginning. It's more a sense of like, the arrangements have already been done. Now, in terms of what's the information that's on the drill charts and that I'm giving to the director as they are implementing the product that I'm giving them, that they have enough information to kind of know what my intent is in terms of whether it's guard equipment changes or the style of the musical style of the choreographic effort or whatever it may be. I try to give them as many notes as I can on the charts that help them to be successful in that way. I have other programs, of course, that are highly competitive. And in those sense, in those programs, it's sort of equally divided. Sometimes it's me. Sometimes it's the band director. None of the programs that I'm working with often have an independent program coordinator per se. Often they expect me to do that role or the director is strong enough to handle those responsibilities on their own.
Yeah, that's really interesting. For what it's worth, I actually am getting to the point now where I'm actually hired as program coordinator for some programs where that's all I do, which is really interesting. But I mean, a lot of times I can go into a work with a program and it's like, you just need somebody to get this all organized, And so sometimes they will actually bring me in simply to do that part. But I think it's, most often it's somebody, like Evan was saying, that's sort of very involved already. But the point is sort of to make that happen. So, Doug, I think that's a really good, a good point that you made for sure.
Yeah, I just think it's an essential part that it's just identified and that communication chain is set up so that way the best possible product can be delivered.
Yeah, and I do think it's helpful to have somebody that sort of really knows this is sort of where the buck stops, even if that program coordinator has to get a sign off by the director or something. You know, still somebody has to. I think it's very helpful in a lot of situations. Okay, so let's go back. Evan, let's go back to you. Another tip you brought with you today.
I guess like another kind of idea. It's almost two ideas in one. But to me, it's trying from a band director's side and what they want or what they expect as the drill. I think it's important to try to keep it simple. Just realizing for me, I guess I'm always trying to convince band directors that you need to have friendlier keys. You need to have, less complex rhythms. We need to not have 8-count drill moves all over the place. You know, just realistic. Sometimes it's a reality check of like, you know, it is really cool. And yes, the best drum corps in the world or the best march band in the world did all these different things. And there was all these drill pages, but where you're at with your rehearsal time, with your student's ability coming in, your staff or lack thereof, your rehearsal schedule, you know, that I think sometimes try to, you know, almost fall in love with a Pyware file or Finale file. Like this on computer is the coolest thing ever. And this is so awesome. And we got all these ideas going, but then it's not going to matter because it's not going to be achieved by the students. You know, I feel that a lot of people are very optimistic in that regard, but, you know, we got to be realistic and make sure it's successful. When it comes to, we want the kids to feel comfortable with what they're doing. You know, if they're struggling just to get from dot to dot or playing note to note, you know, how enjoyable is the process then really for them?
Going off of that idea, one of the things I think it's important for high school band directors to remember is that for the most part, every single show is a first read for judges and outside audience members. Obviously, your parents and hopefully your school administration will see the program more than once. But in terms of the judging community, in most marching band circuits, they're going to see someone for like one time. And if they happen to see one judge more than once, then that would be an outlier rather than the norm. And I think a lot of times they look at more complex programs like the things we're about to see in the summer. With the DCI activity where they look at that and go, oh my gosh, that's so cool. Look at all that detail, nuance and all these great ideas. And, you know, and then, but they have to understand that those programs, the judges see those programs, you know, 3, 4, 5 times before championships. And so then they're able to go in and get more and more information from the staff based on critique, and based on those multiple reads. But in the marching band activity, you know, my good friend Wayne Markworth always says, it has to be marching band for dummies. Like it has to be the Disney version of it. You know, that when you walk into France at Epcot Center, it's like France in 1 hour a week. So, often I think the band directors try too hard to emulate what they see in other activities. And that sometimes causes some of those complexity issues that Evan was speaking of.
Yeah, I agree completely. I always use this analogy. It's like a fashion designer who's trying to design the perfect jacket. And they have all these fabric textures or buttons or sequins or different shiny objects that they want to put on that jacket. And usually what it needs more than anything is just an editor to come in and subtract away the unnecessary things, to just take the best ideas to bring focus to that, you know, to that jacket. And I think in our world, you know, we have some great thinkers, we have some great idea generators and great brainstormers that come up with fantastic ideas. And I think, you know, either the director or the drill designer has to be the person to say, okay, these are the best ideas that we can realistically make, happen. So that way the production can actually breathe in moments, you know, so that there has to be some down moments in the production or it just becomes a run-on sentence.
Yeah, how many times have we heard Tim Gunn talk about using your editor's eye, right? You need to edit, yep. edit. I mean, and I love that. I think that's great, great advice there that you guys are sharing, because I think people try to do too much. You know, speaking of Evan, what you said, You know, my friend David Starnes, who had those wonderful bands up at Kennesaw Mountain, he always talked about how his band, you know, who was performing and competing at the highest level of bands of America, you know, he would always say, mm-hmm. we play half as many notes as everybody else, you know, but hard mm-hmm. to find more effective shows. So I think people right. do try to do too much. I don't know if it's ego or they just feel like they got to have all this content. But Stephen, I agree with you. These DCI groups, that's a whole different thing than what we're doing on Friday nights with our marching bands.
I think that directors need to be timely the same way they expect their drill writer to be timely. At times I've actually had directors where because the music is coming to them at a slower pace, they get things to the drill writer at the last minute, but they still expect a great product on time from us. And I think it's important for them to understand that we do our best, especially those of us that do this, you know, on a professional basis, to be on time with our product at the highest possible level we can provide for them. But if they are giving if they're giving the music to us piece by piece, it's hard for us to look at the entire product from beginning to end and understand how to create a horizontal product that makes sense over the 7 minutes or 7.5 minutes. But also, it forces us then to do things in a manner that doesn't provide opportunity for excellence on our part as much, because we're doing it at the last minute to get them what they need because they gave it to us at the last minute. So I think the more timely they can be, the more they set the drill writer up for success.
Yeah, I agree completely. I can't tell you the number of times that this has occurred to me. And, of course, we try to do our due diligence and our job to get that out, because the kids are the ones who get harmed in the end if they don't have drill to learn on the timeline that they need it. And the number of times that I've sent off a hastily written transition or an entire production, and the next day I think, man, if I could just, you know, adjust this one thing, but they've already learned it, you know, and do they sacrifice their learning curve? And yeah, I completely agree. And I'm big on ideas having in the brain, so that those numbers, or the music coming in, like, it needs time to rest in the brain so that way that you can produce the best work that you have. You know, if it's done hastily, I mean, you're never going to get the best product.
Yeah, okay. I mean, there's definitely that time factor for sure. I think that, like, for me, when I'm writing, I really try not to analyze what I'm writing. You know, like, I feel like it's one process to just get it out on paper and just get it out there. And then usually there's some parts of it I'm not super happy with. But I come back the next day and then kind of put more of my judging hat on and then look at it and watch it. And usually I can figure out how to manipulate it, or like the idea becomes clear. Okay, well, if I did this instead of this, it would be there. But it has to be, for me, a couple step process that you can't do all of it in one run, you know. So it's having obviously the time for that. And for me, you know, I try to do a really good job of, you know, basically if I get half production or one production done, I try to send it out to a band director just so they can see it, or if they see anything that's glaring or whatnot that's not going to work out for them, that they see it and they have it. So that way, as I move on to the next movement, you know, versus they get the show, you know, here's the whole show, and then they're like, well, I really hate pages 15 through 20. You know, because once it gets to that point, you can't, you know, and that really has to do with the band director being organized also, that if I send them a YouTube video of the opener and, you know, I need really within a day, I need to have them look at it and sign off on it or any thoughts that they have along the way. Cause, you know, again, if I didn't hear anything, I'm going to keep going and I finish the opener. And then they're like, well, I don't like page 10 or page 12. You know, it's not as easy as it is for a music arranger to just chop out 16 measures, put a drum break in somewhere, you know, that on the timeline of drill, you can't just cut something out of the middle and then the pieces still connect in a way that, you know, is aesthetically pleasing and makes musical sense and visual sense.
Agreed.
Yeah, that's really interesting because you're right. Because if you're writing the music, you have so much flexibility to go back and change, but the drill is so linear. That's part of what's so terrifying about it, I think, for all of us.
Yeah. I mean, it's the laws of time travel when someone goes back in dinosaur time and steps on a stick, and then now we're being ruled by monkeys or something, you know?
Well, and to go off of that, I think it's also important to understand that when band directors make edits on the fly, they mm-hmm. just decide they want to change something on the field in rehearsal. Often it leads to odd transitions later on that they don't necessarily foresee because they're not looking at the product in terms of the geometric or linear whole. For example, if a band director decides, oh, I really want a rifle soloist in the front here, and they run this kid all the way in the front, it also means that at some point they got to run him all the way back to where they were. And it's probably going to cause other issues in terms of that horizontal flow that we've worked really hard to develop for them. And then in like the blink of an eye, they've kind of blown up some logical ideas that we've worked so hard to create. So for me, I prefer that when they have edits like that, they come to me in advance and I'll do the best I can to try to help them to work out any transitional issues like that. But often, when they do it on the fly without thinking through how it affects other moments that are either preceding or coming following that it sometimes causes bigger issues than they understand. And that goes back to that idea of when one thing changes, it causes a million changes down the it's a domino rally in drill, you know?
Yeah, to that effect, I have to share a quick story. I wrote for a band years ago, and they were doing some sort of Nutcracker ballet thing. And after the drill was completed, and he was teaching it, this director decided that he had this ballet dancer who could actually dance on point, but she had to have a wooden floor to dance on, and he had to suddenly decide to put this in the show. He had never mentioned it to me. He literally stopped the show, had a bunch of kids run up, grab a wooden platform. Everybody moved out of the way. They pulled it out, and then they reformed, and she danced. And then they stopped the show, and everybody moved out of the way. And he literally did this in performances. And to say, that was the last year I wrote for his band.
Yeah.
But like you know, how can he not have some concept? So, Stephen, I think to that point, it wouldn't be – I mean, I tell my clients, look, call me. You know, if you're on the field and something's not working, before you make some giant decision, maybe check in with me. I say the same to him about music. You know, maybe there's a reason I made that decision. Just let me be a part of the discussion, right?
Mm-hmm.
For sure. I communicate that as well to my directors. I say, I'm here. I'm home. I do this. More than happy to take your call. It's not I'm not a stranger. I'm not going to, you know, block your number and not take your call. I'm more than happy to listen and help you figure out either whether the choice you're choosing to make is worth it from a risk and reward standpoint, or whether it's something we can just easily do, but we can plan on, you know, we can figure out how to plan out for you in a more appropriate way. So I think that's part of what we do. And sometimes directors aren't, they're not necessarily willing to use us in that way. And I think that's a mistake on their part. If they used us more, we might be able to help them to get some of those moments to be even stronger for their performances.
Yeah, I agree. This might be a good way to bridge into my next point. I mean, I just think there's an ethical way to communicate with your designers that helps foster a good relationship. So that way you can get the best out of your designer. Is that be open, be honest, set up, you know, a professional climate. And don't be fearful of criticism, because we all want what's best for the kids. We want that to be the best, you know, staging moment. We want it to be the best transition. We want it to be the most creative idea we can come up with. And, you know, what we're kind of here talking about is centering around, I think sometimes directors fear being critical of their designer's work out of fear that they may not get, you know, total cooperation moving forward from that designer. You know, and I think I personally think that's a breach of ethics if a director is critical of a designer and then, you know, the designer then and maybe pouts about it and, you know, is fearful of criticism of their own work, you know. There are many great designers out there that are flexible, that are willing to make those changes and are willing to work with the directors to get the best, you know, possible product. Now, I think that, you know, the director also needs to set a tone that does invite that open communication. I think a lot of times, I call it the fly swatter mentality, that, you know, someone comes up on the design team with an idea that could be brilliant, but it isn't well thought out when it's proposed. And, you know, we tend to smack those ideas down, very quickly before they're flushed out. You know, and I think the director really is the one who gets to set that tone up, that, that everyone's ideas are important. Everyone's ideas are heard. And I think, you know, as drill designers, we have to, you know, kind of be open for that same level of criticism in our own work, that, you know, they may not be eloquently phrasing what is wrong with what we've done, but, you know, that we have to be open to listen to, you know, any of those criticisms. But anyways, I just think as a band director, you have to clearly state concise ideas or take the opposite approach and just clearly trust that the designer is going to do their job. You know, I think when you get in the middle of those two things, I think is where, you know, a lot of confusion occurs.
So, Doug, are you saying that there are drill writers who are such artistes that they get easily offended and have egos? Come on. That can't be the case. I'm joking. No. Your point is really well made. Like, let's be honest and communicate. And let's, as drill writers, let's not be so sensitive. Like Stephen, like I said a minute ago to you, like, I don't mind you. I want to be a part of the discussion. I don't want you to arbitrarily just disregard my work. Let me be part of the discussion. I'll have a friendly discussion with you. And if you decide to do what you're going to do, fine. But I just want to be a part of the discussion.
Absolutely. No question. And that was my point as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that's a good point, Greg.
There's a reason they hire us. I mean, you know, honestly, if you're going to hire a drill writer and then not use them as a consultant, if you're looking to make a change to the product that they created for you based upon what the information you gave to them in advance, then you're not getting your money's worth. I mean, you're choosing to throw some of the money you spent on that product out the window because you're just going to change it arbitrarily without allowing that person to give you their professional judgment and their professional experience in terms of that edit moment.
Yeah, I'm loving it. That all makes perfect sense. And, you know, it's interesting you said that because I've been sitting around scratching my head. I have certain clients this year that are new clients and they're just not taking my advice. And I just keep thinking like, why did they seek me out and hire me if then they're not going to take any of my advice? I don't know. It's very, very frustrating. Not that I'm flawless, but like, you know, you called me, you know?
Right. One of my tips that I wrote down is trust the pros. I mean, if you're going to hire a music arranger and you're going to hire a drill writer, you're going to hire a color guard choreographer, and nowadays you're going to hire a body person for your ensemble, and those people are going to be expected to create, you give them all the information they need up front, but then you got to trust their, judgment. You know, I mean, if you're, like it doesn't necessarily help to micromanage that process to a degree. I mean, if I hired Tim Hinton to write my music, then I've spent I've spent money on that product. I obviously trusted you to do the job to the best of your professional ability. And so unless there's a reason for me to say that I don't like something based upon what you provide to me, I got to trust your viewpoint and your vision. And I think the same is true for any of us any number of other guys that do this professionally.
Right. And to that point that Doug said, don't be afraid of us. You know, like call me and say, I don't understand this part. Can you explain this? Like, I want to be part of the conversation. And Doug, I think that's what happens is like, they're afraid that I'm going to be insulted if they say, I don't get this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of my best ideas have come from fixing a concern of a client. I mean, you know, sometimes our first idea isn't our best idea, and that friction that's generated or that strain or adversity is created through that idea not working out sometimes births some amazingly immaculate ideas. I mean, how many times have we seen a drum corps show that for the first 2 weeks of the season, you're like, oh, wow, that's a hot mess. That's never going to work. And then they come back with this brilliant redesign that, you know, just knocks our socks off. Mm. I mean, and I can think you know, very recently, you know, some of the rewrites in the Angels and Demons show of the cadets, that, you know, had they not made those redesigns, I'm not sure they would have won. And just some very brilliant things are birthed through that adversity. And I think we shouldn't be afraid of it.
I think the flip side is also true, though. I also think that we're not in a position where we have an entire summer of 16-hour rehearsal days where, you know, we have the opportunity to make those, you know, those kind of mass edits in our activity. You know, when I was a high school band director, I was really happy if my kids learned it the first time. You know, by the time they learned it the first time, I was really happy. So, I was very reticent to do major changes.
Yeah.
Now that's different than an edit. An edit's different than a change, in my opinion. A change is like throw the baby out with the bathwater, start over. An edit's like tweak this moment, edit this little moment, make this a little better, fix this transition, whatever it is. And those things I think are really doable in the time schedule band directors have. But I think as drill writers, we really do have to get it right the first time more often than not. Otherwise, we put the director in a position where they end up spending more time doing rewrites than they are cleaning. And in the long run, at the end of a marching band season, clean is the most successful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No doubt. Well, guys, we have to start wrapping this up. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to let each little lightning round here at the end. Any final thoughts, something you wanted to throw out there at the very end? Evan, I'll start with you. Any final thoughts before we go?
I think we all said it a bunch of times throughout the process that communication is the biggest thing, and that's communication on the front end before the drill writer gets it, being a part of, you know, the arrangement of the music. So we know what's coming at us. Then once we get it, you know, open communication, what the director wants, but then also as we're going through the process, things we want to ask the director, communicate with, and being timely with it. And then once they have the drill and they start learning it, and then maybe there's something that, you know, like Tim said, that like maybe like they feel like there's a better answer in this spot, maybe it could be done, you know, communicate that back to the drill writer and see if there's an idea between, you know, multiple people that can get it to be fixed versus, I mean, I'm very type A. So like, to me, changing anything on the go is terrifying and a bad idea. It's not, but to me, it is. You know, it's like I spent hours making these three pages work really, really well for you. You know, he said it was mentioned, I was talking to Climbout the other day, that like we want to all of a sudden add this thing in here, but to add 16 plus counts of transition to do a different moment that we thought up of after the fact, and then taking our 16 plus counts to get out of it, the it's not worth it. You have a higher percentage of bad transition to get to a spot that's not going to be worth the moment at that point because it wasn't communicated or thought out on the early side when it was being written. And it's not worth, you know, I tell clients, it's so much more about transitions, and, you know, you can't have, well, this is a really great moment and this is a really great moment, but then the four phrases of movement between the two are a big mess or a scatter drill because we're trying to rewrite something or do something that makes sense. It's not worth all the transition to get to those moments if the transitions aren't good.
Yeah. Good point. Steven, final thoughts, buddy.
Our job as the drill writer is to create a horizontal product that has good flow and logic from the first moment of the program to the last moment of the program. So going back to what Evan said, when we start making changes in the middle of that, horizontal flow, that's when you start hearing words like functional from judging panels in terms of transitional efforts. And, you start hearing, you know, judges question the methodology of getting from a moment to a moment, when more than likely the original choice was probably stronger in terms of logic and design flow, which often is more highly credited in our activity over the long run, especially on a first read, than maybe a moment that's 1% better than the moment you already had created. So I would agree with that.
Yeah, good point. Doug, you get the final word today. What's your final thoughts?
Yeah, just to kind of wrap up, be organized, be honest, be early, edit, 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 and get a firm grasp, on the fine line between optimism and reality. You know, we all have these pie in the sky ideas, but we have to know our strengths. We have to know our teaching abilities. We have to know our kids. And the greatest ideas crumble when we don't take that into account.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Great point. We can't all be Avon, right? All right. Fantastic, guys. Evan, Stevens, Doug, you guys were wonderful. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Tim.
Make sure and listen to the next two podcasts, where two more panels of drill writers will share more great advice for directors and staff members that can help you have a more successful season. Remember to follow the Marching Roundtable on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And you can search for other podcasts in our podcast archives at our website at marchingroundtable.com. You can search there by category or just put a word into the search bar. And while at the website, sign up for a free VIP membership so you'll receive our bi-weekly newsletter and be notified about upcoming podcast releases and guests. You can also find links there to valuable resources and to the coursework at the Judges Academy. Thanks again to the sponsor of this podcast, Marching Show Concepts and Center X Productions, found at msconcepts.com. Thanks again to Evan, Stephen, and Doug for joining us on this podcast, and thanks to you for listening. This is your host, Tim Hinton. I invite you to visit my website at timhinton.com, where you can hear my arrangements and compositions for marching band, where you can contact me about marching band design advice. I'd love to help you have the most successful season possible.